Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Saturday Night Health, Fun, and Science Show. December 6th, 2008. Tomorrow's Pearl Harbor Day on Sunday. It was a Sunday before when this happened. Anyhow, last night we had Leah, Renee, and Christian from the Third Point Studio up in by the LAX, Los Angeles International Airport. You'll get information on that. Steve Barish, of course, was on, and Bella Bird were my co-hosts. We had a lot of fun. So we're going to swing right on in tonight into a nice seminar, which will be fun.
This little seminar, you're just getting a taste of what I've been exposed to most of my life since I was a kid. And it's really amazing. And that's why people go crazy at night, you know, when they can't reach rapid eye movement sleep. Why do they go crazy? Because they can't get feedback. If you wake somebody up when they go to sleep at night, their physical body is moving out to relax. The etheric body is coming up to charge off the earth and the magnetic currents of the earth. And then 2 hours, you should be detoxed fully, which we're not. And then, boom, we go into the astral body, which is 13 feet out of the physical body. In the astral body, we're in the astral plane. On the astral plane, we are now connected with our neighbors, our friends, our lovers, our relatives that are no longer in form. Or we're with some that are in form that haven't met in the physical yet. Or they're meeting with extraterrestrials. Or they're meeting with masters. Or they're going to planetary schools. If you cut that off from somebody on the physical plane, they become violent. They usually become a serial killer. They become death-oriented, and they go out. If you notice, any serial killer in history, first thing to tell you about psychologists, they don't sleep. They go into a metamorphic state and they just stay there. They don't dream, they don't sleep. Our society generates ELF waves, radiation. You ever get that jumping sensation at night? Because you're getting bombarded on the astral plane consciously by the grays. 300,000 Americans have been implanted already. During the state, the grays operate on this level, they control on this level. That's why it's damn important to sleep inside of the pyramid. Because the pyramid is the only shape really safe today, in today's times, to sleep in at night and know you're not going to get bombarded by something. It works the same way as that ELF and ELF generator over there does. Okay, now, it's 4:15, so let's take a 15-minute break. I'm losing my voice. Let's turn back and forth. Okay, I'm going to talk about the receptors a little bit right now. This is a good time. First of all, we should talk about the aging process first, leading into the receptor. Before you're born, you have 46 base pairs per turn on the DNA level. Okay, if you look at DNA, it's two sugars and it's two phosphates. And what happens is these two sugars, these two phosphates, when they come into a plant, electricity hits them and forms the first life forms as we know. This is where life starts. So DNA is rotating. It's really energy fields that rotate. And these rotate in directions so that when they cross, it becomes the energy field unifies continuously. And what you have in DNA, the next level, it comes up to a level called genes. And within genes are microgenes. I think each DNA strand has 1,250 genes, microgenes in it. But I think we've done all the math on this.
Do you know when that goes through a flat plane, it produces a perfect circle?
A what now?
A perfect circle. When you take a coin, that's called a coin.
Yeah.
What you do, or that's what they call it, an
right, it, I know that, yeah.
And what it does, when it goes through a two-dimensional plane, it actually produces sphere, around, perfectly round circle like this.
Right, right. We have that. As a matter of fact, that is in one of my charts.
It would be that chart. Back it up here. I've got a chart in here.
See, when you start dealing with the different planes of consciousness, there it is, you start getting, you can take the turns, you can take the ratio, for example, each particle backing up the physical plane to the astral plane, particles become subatomic particles on the three etheric states. And before they're atomic, they're astral. And astral is where omegons come from. That's where color comes from, is the astral energy, the astral. And if you go back up, if you take how many anu, if you were to psychically observe anu, remember that Ledbetter did this at the turn of the century. They looked at oxygen, and they found that it had 290 spirals in its energy field. And then they took hydrogen, and it had 18. And when they divided it, they came up with hydrogen of a top atomic weight of 1, which corresponds to the table of the period table of the physics.
What actually creates that is a spiral, is an incomplete sphere. So what right. actually creates that is the repulsion process. You have these two forces, the desire for creative expression and the desire for remaining in a state of inertia. See, what the spiral does is, that's why it becomes conical, is it contracts and tries to go back into the inertial plane, go back to the zero point of energy. It's always trying to disintegrate. What you call ionization, that's what ionization is, pulling off, that's what the science calls pulling off of electrons, or ionization. That's how they fly their ships. They take a cesium rod made of nickel, lead, and cobalt, and they siphon off electrons out of the torus. They use to design a torus, and they run tritium and deuterium through the torus, which are heavy water isotopes. What they do is they create a spinning, they have a parabolic mirror that spins the electrons that are being siphoned off the
That's right, though. So basically, when you get into birth, if you start looking at the DNA, you have chromosomes. You have 46 chromosomes located on top of these 1,250 genes. And what you're looking at is the spacing of the chromosomes determines the genetic characteristic of somebody that's being born. You know, all the physical characteristics, spiritual, all that stuff, how you're coming through is spacing. If you were to look at this electronically, you would end up with a transformer. So an electromagnetic field here is induced, an electromagnetic field here, and depending on what the core material of this transformer is, in terms of whether sound goes through here, you know, high frequency electricity goes through here, low frequency, what kind of frequency range determined by the type of transformer and the number of turns. Okay? DNA works the same way. So genetically, when it's working in the body, the perfect gene structure for a human being is 46 base pairs per turn. Okay? So just before the baby is born, you have 46 base pairs per turn. And so the perfect functioning organ is the human placenta in the mother's womb, because the baby is growing. But as soon as that connection to the umbilical cord is cut and the child is born and it takes its first breath, immediately you have 34 base pairs per turn in the child's DNA, reproducing every single cell in the body at this rate. So that means that you have lost 25% of your lifespan when you take your first breath of air on this physical plane. Okay, you're aged 25%. When you reach 18 years old, the age of the DNA despirals significantly again, you know, it's doing it all the time, you now only have 18 base pairs per turn. And so at age of 18 and 19, 50% of your lifespan has been spent already of the energy that you were born at birth. Okay? This is the way the human kingdom is pretty much operating. And so that's why it's so stupid. When you reach 56 or 50 years old, you have 6 base pairs per turn, typically, in DNA. And that's why the aging process is highly accelerated at 50. So you've lost 95% of your life
and vitality that you had before birth when you're 50 years old. This is the problem on Earth. This is what the grays brought to our society during the scalar position antimatter wars that took place during the planets. So when you start introducing the receptor technology, it slows down the age reversal process on the human that's wearing this.
You know how they're doing it? They're actually changing the contour of the lens, the angle of the lens. That's how you control focusing and defocusing of the wave.
Yeah.
The vortex is by changing the angle of the lens. Right. They're actually distorting the lens. You have a gravitational lens that goes across the universe. And what they're doing is they're distorting the angle of the lens. They're actually controlling it.
A Pleiadian, for example, lives 1,000 years, so they can have 1,000 year experiences, whereas we have 10 year experiences. What's that? It's a joke. And that's where we're at. So the receptor is one of the devices that helps switch that around. So the receptor design, if you look at it, it has a parabolic lens on it, which is tuned to about 3.58 megahertz. It's also got higher frequencies and lower frequencies. And the energy comes in, and it comes into these split pyramids. And somehow or other it's divided. You know, Semyonovsky explained it to me, but I still don't understand exactly what they do completely. But this order of the arrangement of the pyramids and their size falls into the Fibonacci series, which breaks up the energy. Now, remember we showed you in muscle testing with the pyramid right side up and upside down. The receptor effectively is creating a scalar wave, a neutral positive pyramid. You know, here's a positive one here, there's a negative one. So in this scale, if I muscle test somebody here, when the pyramid's like this, they're going to test strong. If I test them up here, they're going to test weak until they balance their female energy. So you reach a point, a focal point, within the structure that's defined by the different curvature of the curve. You know, the radiator over there has a much higher, more distant focal point than you out here somewhere, where the energies of the positive and the energies of the negative come together, which is an extension of this technology. So what we do at the focal point of the female and the male energy, we muscle test the person for what stone is they in, what color is their weak in. So when we find out what color they're weak in, then immediately the hydrogen atom is getting beefed up because the person is utilizing around their carbon atom, either hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen, three gases. So immediately what happens is when you enhance this color that they're weak in, you start building the field back up. When you start building the field back up, then what happens is the receptor now has a healing effect on the body. Now remember, you're healing yourself. Now the field is starting to expand rather than contract. It's an expanding field rather than a contracting field. The grays want it to contract, we want it to expand. So we test the person for the type of stone that they need. Okay? Then what happens is the energy is processed in that color, it amplifies this color, whichever stone it is, sends it out to the back side of the hole, which has what's called a Yanan mantram on the back, which is a microwave trap. And what this does is it filters out any desirable subharmonic frequencies that that person doesn't need. So it focuses the frequency of the color of the stone. Then what happens is it goes back over here and radionically and homeopathically attaches itself to one field, just one field of the human aura, one spin of that aura frequency. Okay? So now that one color of that person is perfect. It's identically, optically correct what it should be. This then reflects down through the hydrogen atom, the other six frequencies, and starts to bring them back to center. Then what happens is all of the seven colors of the rainbow, which are seven rays, will now center down on the frequency of the chakra, this alien, the flowing chakra in the system, and that chakra then starts coming up the frequency to where it's supposed to be again. This affects the reproduction of cells. The first group of cells that you'll notice this in would be the red blood cells, which reproduce in 90 days. Then over the period of 6 months, another group of cells in that frequency of this green that you need will also be affected. This goes on for 7 years. So effectively, when people wear the receptors over a period of time, that body group of their body starts to get strong again. Eventually, they'll probably come up and be muscle tested a year or so later, and they may find that the green is up fairly strong in the body. So now they have to be muscle tested for the next weakest color, which might be blue, which would be the heart. So you muscle test them again, and boom, now the heart starts coming in, the heart organs and the other. And so you go through all seven colors of the rainbow over a period of time, and then it repeats itself. And each time it repeats itself, that cell group starts coming up and starts re-spiraling up the DNA. Okay? That's basically what you're doing with the receptor. That's one of many things that you're doing. The other thing is, of course, you're blocking some of the effects of ELF for protein identification, because we're looking at DNA imprints. When you get into DNA work, and this is why it's called nuclear, because we're referring to the nuclear forces within the atom, when you start going into the DNA pattern of the human body, it's a seminar from now until hell freezes over, isn't it? I mean, it's forever. If we could talk DNA forever. So basically, we just introduce the concept of what a nuclear receptor is and let people start to figure it out for themselves how it behaves. Now, the next thing that happens is we make them out of different materials. Some people can start out with a solid gold receptor for ultimate healing power. We start out with a zinc and cadmium base. Zinc was chosen because zinc, we did testing with people wearing zinc bars, and pretty much everybody on this planet is deficient in zinc. Elements like fiberglass and synthetics take zinc out of the body. You know, the old bathtubs were zinc and now they're fiberglass. You can see it in their grease structure. So cadmium was also chosen because cadmium worn on the outside of the body causes the person to give up radiation, radioactivity that they've accumulated. If you were to take a woman on dairy products that's pregnant, 8.5 months pregnant, ready to have milk and has milk in the breast, and you were to transport this woman who's eating dairy products across the state line, she could be arrested by the FDA for transporting a substance, radioactive substance, over a state line, because the human breast milk has been tested on women and females, and the radiation is so great at dairy products that they're legally over the limit.
Did you know that under the current laws, I used to be into this kind of stuff, setting the law and everything, kind of pretty diversified person.
Yeah.
And when you get into the code that deals with extraterrestrials, they actually have a code of laws on this. It's in the Code of Federal Regulations, CFRs. And what they say in there is that they can actually incarcerate you, isolate you from the public if you've got any alien contact.
Oh yeah, I've got that at home. One of the NASA tech briefs, I've got the actual documentation. I even know the number, the law. It's against the law to have contact with extraterrestrials. It is United States federal law.
Yeah, if you've got any contact with them, they can prove it, they can isolate you, put you in a decontamination center.
Forever. That's true. It's illegal to be a contactee. And they have laws written into them. I've read them. I've got them at home. I know exactly how to keep a file on those. Basically, right now, because if we haven't got into the laws, the legal side of this, but Mark, see, the FEMA group from the Federal Emergency Management Act, what it is, it's not here to provide disaster management like the floods. That's how it's being introduced to the public. About 2 years ago, we had a FEMA exercise in downtown L.A., and the people downtown L.A. saw what a FEMA exercise is really all about. That's where they fly unmarked black helicopters in, make landings, surround the city, and take over the occupants of this building or any building they want. They actually did that in downtown L.A., and they did it on a Friday night. And the next day in the news, they said that this was not an emergency, that this was an exercise in the FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Act.
Every one of these police departments are a part of FEMA. They can man up all these police are. See, you don't have a state anymore. What you have is centralization of power through feudalism, or federal, they call federalism. Federalism, right. If you look at the etymology of the word federal, it comes from feudal. What they have is a system of feudalism, tenant feudalism.
They have each police officer on these large forces has another uniform that they're not wearing yet. It's like a military uniform that identifies them with FEMA, like the United States Military Police. And all police stations are required now to start having this dual set of uniforms. And in Los Angeles, for example, the police department has these uniforms now. They're black uniforms, like the Men in Black. And they will be worn one day. I've got videotapes up there about the government getting ready to take over civilian populace.
Second thing that they did, see, when they declared martial law, you have no constitutional rights whatsoever. Zero amendments work. They can take you anywhere in the world, not tell any person responsible why they did this, for no reason. And in order to enact that law, they had to create fear. And this is what the Iraqi war was all about. Saddam Hussein was the pawn they chose. Because terrorism is a perfect excuse, nuclear terrorism, meaning a briefcase bomb threat, the nuclear warhead potential, was a perfect example of how powerful a bomb could be. And so that's why when the war started with Iraq, that they told us that be careful when you travel by air, because the Iraqis are going to be carrying, there's going to be a lot of terrorism going on in airplanes. They created that. The Iraqis didn't even have anything nuclear to do this, but they did not have that in mind. And that's why Saddam Hussein hates George Bush, because George Bush was the head of FEMA at the time, and he's also a head of ad hoc, and he's also very active in our government even today, as it stands. There's so much going on that you don't realize. There is another group going against this. My great-grandfather, was Ethan Allen. And he has a group that he started called the Green Mountain Boys. And Green Mountain Boys are Minutemen. And the Minutemen exist today. And the only thing that keeps FEMA in check right now is the power of the Minutemen, because they're worldwide. Minutemen have military arms. They have access to nuclear arms. They have jets. They have everything that our government has, the Minutemen have. That's the only power that's going on. Meanwhile, they're trying to de-legislate, take away our freedom to bear arms. So what they did is they took people, the Grays implanted people, like Stephen Whitney was an implant, for example, and they put him in Austin, Texas. And what they did is they had him start shooting people. And so he shot 14 people before he got killed. And he became one of the first serial mass killings that goes on in public. And they made sure he had an automatic weapon, which he had, semi-automatic rifle. So then with that legislation, they did a ruling trying to make a lot of semi-automatic weapons illegal. I own some semi-automatic weapons, but I can't keep them in California. I have to keep them in Arizona because they're illegal here. Because I'm a marksman. I like to shoot as a hobby. I'm not a revolutionary of violent force, but I am trained in hand-to-hand combat. I have learned these things being in the military and working for the government myself for 20-some-odd years to learn all this stuff. So then when they did an autopsy on Stephen Whitney, they found two implants at the base of his brain. And they announced this on national television on ABC when they did a television special.
Did they use a transmitter?
What they have is they holographically position. They use the minerals when they implant a human. They take a human, and they're doing a lot of women all the time. Women are easier to do than men, but they do some men. What they do is they have a circuitry to control your senses and your common sense, and they can direct you. They can say, go over there and stomp on that plant, and you'll do that subconsciously. You won't know why you're doing it. It might even happen to O.J. Simpson. Who knows? Or whoever killed his wife. But anyway, because that was definitely done to create something which is doing national attention. There's something going on here that we haven't seen yet. This, like I say, this case is full of surprises, and we haven't even got the first one yet. But anyway, they have a machine. It's very similar to technology now that we have on a larger scale, and they beam into your brain an imprint of a machine, like a MOSFET or a large scale integrated device, like a transistor, like a transistor watch, some circuit that controls you. They beam that into your brain, image, and then your brain melts down, takes the minerals and stuff out of your brain, and then causes it to fuse into this working device. So they turn the beam off, the device has infused itself, made itself up from elements from your body. So that's why it's surgically impossible to remove it, because it's too far in there. This is one form of implant that you have to be careful of receiving. We found that some of these implants will dissolve when we use this mineral solution over a period of time, and they have a tendency to wash out of the system. You can neutralize it, but it takes a long period of time. But this is one of the biggest things that's going on in our society right now. That's why it's very important, for example, to have devices like the nuclear receptor on to create an aura field where it makes it very hard to get cornered subconsciously the way these grays work. See, the human red blood cell, if you look at the one I showed you there, the iron atom, has an octahedron. An octahedron can anchor seven levels of consciousness. When the iron goes through the body, it drops off consciousness in each cell. And one action, which is called the Bohr effect, is picking up oxygen, carbon dioxide and leaving off oxygen. And another level, the same moment it does that to the cell, it's energizing the cell with the seven rays of energy. And the pyramid, the pyramid shape is the shape that causes this to happen. If you were to take your hands together, rub your hands together right now, and you'll feel your energy. If you take that energy and direct it over grapefruit juice, okay, you direct it over grapefruit juice, you'll turn the grapefruit juice sweet because you're balancing the pH. If you take hands like this together and do like this and hold them underneath the pyramid, move the pyramid up and down, you can feel the pyramid amplifying that effect. Okay, that's the life force effect. The grays, now what you're doing here is you're amplifying the effect of what your blood does, okay, which is seven levels of consciousness. The grays, if you look at their blood structure, it's like a magnesium atom. It's a three-sided tetrahedron, a three-sided pyramid. It's like chlorophyll in a plant. Chlorophyll does not have the ability to lock down the seventh ray, the violet ray. It only locks down the sixth, the upper sixth.
What are they
seven.
Like? A plant like?
Huh?
They're like a plant.
They're an insect.
Insect.
Grays are insects. And they feed on plants. Now they feed on humans, but...
You say they have a tetrahedron?
Tetrahedron, central magnesium atom rather than iron. So as a result, their ground is our astral plane. That's why the way they think, I mean, it's hard for me to do the sounds of the gray because I've spoken to them in their language. I know how to speak their, how to make their sounds. I used to do it when I was a kid more than I can do it now. It's a high-pitched screech, like crickets get. I don't have the ability to communicate like that anymore.
What do they look like in terms?
They have big heads, small bodies, wiry.
Oval-shaped head?
Yeah, they have a great bone structure right down the center. They have left brain, right brain, separate brains. They have a large heart here, small heart down here where our kidney would be. They're different structures. But see, they only their electromagnetic spectrum of their aura frequency is the top of where we go to sleep in our dream state. So they enter into our dreams through their consciousness. Yeah. And then they get you theta because they communicate the screeching sounds has theta characteristics. So the theta characteristics programs the subconscious. That's why people they blank out when they have the experience and they have to be hypnotized for retrieval later. This is all very high tech stuff. And the government is enacting laws to protect them, to disarm the public, you know, to make them totally helpless when this invasion, if they decide to, you know, when George Bush was running for president, they already had printed up the United States currency, the rainbow money, the fake money from the one world government. But Belgium backed out, and I think France got edgy about it, and so they never came out with the one world currency to replace all the American dollars. But they're as quick as they can, they're going to do that. You know, I can give a whole political scenario on this. But I'm trying to restrict that. It's in my tape series. You can hear it, a lot of what I'm talking about in there. It's also in that one book by Bill Hamilton sitting over there with a spaceship on the cover of it.
But do you think ultimately that there's going to have some kind of intervention? Or do you think...
The Andromedans, the intervention has already started. The Andromedans have already started with the intervention, okay? That's what we're leading up to. But I'm just teaching the mechanics of the Pleiadian stuff first. So going back to the receptors now, so we have this base metal receptor that you can get that's made with a gold plate. And this is what you start with if you don't have a lot of money. Some people, however, would rather start with a silver receptor. Now, a silver receptor doesn't have the softness of a regular receptor, but a silver receptor absorbs radiation, accumulates radiation in large amounts. So if you're getting a large amount of radiation like some people do, you need to have a silver one. The silver one also amplifies the nuclear force generated to the DNA level of the receptor structure itself. And the silver ones, in short, are quite more powerful than the regular ones. The only thing about the silver ones is that they have to be, they'll accumulate so much radiation that they become radioactive. So you have to take them off. And the first thing they tell you, if you're ever exposed to a radiation like from fallout, is to take a shower. So what you have to do with the silver one is give it a bath once a week, salt water, or rinse it off in a tap or something. But and then, of course, you're going to have to repolish it because the water is so damn corrosive that you're going to have to be polishing. So the silver one, the advantages are more intense radiation effect, but this is, and more intense cleanup of radiation, but this advantage is to keep it looking good. You got to polish it all the time. Then you go into the gold ones. When you get into the gold receptor, like there's only two in the world that have platinum bridges. Most of them have a gold bridge or a silver bridge. And the reason that there's only two in the world is because the lesson that the gold receptor carries. It carries a tremendous amount of holographic power. It has a tremendous amount of healing power, many times more than a silver one or a regular one. The bridges are collective in energy when you use platinum on the bridges, which is an incredibly hard metal to work. But when you start, for example, if you were to put on a violet receptor, you know, a violet one is what I call the most magical one, it will change your aura field immediately. And explain how that happens. As soon as you change your aura field, immediately it changes relationships. Relationships, because the aura field, you see what you express, and you start expressing something different. So immediately with the violet one, you notice a change in your friends. Some friends are going to go away, and some new ones are going to come. Immediately, change, you'll have a social change. Because anytime you play around with aura frequencies, you have social changes, because the social pattern is built of accumulation of attractive and repelling energies, okay? This particular one, when you get up into a gold one, it causes a very powerful metamorphic change in your structure. And Roy became an experiment on that, because what happened was this gold receptor that I have on here now taught me a lesson. We had a silver one. We made up a silver one at one point, and we gold plated it, and we mounted a diamond bridge on it like this, and we used to use it as a model. It was a working receptor, but it wasn't a gold one. It made it look like one. This is a solid gold one. It used to have a gold bridge on it. One day I was going to pick up one of my artists at the airport, Holly Penfield, who's one of my lead singers in my band Voyager. And I got down to the high school in Laguna Beach here, driving my truck, and something, the hood came up on the truck. It came loose, so I didn't want to go on the freeway with it because it would blow over into the windshield. But I had to stop and get out. I got out, and I was in a hurry and put the hood down. Well, I didn't know it, so I had a smaller chain on the receptor. And so the receptor caught on the hood of the truck, which I didn't notice, and the receptor fell off. I rolled into the ditch. So I continued on to the airport, having lost a solid gold receptor. You know, I didn't have it anymore. It wasn't mine. It was given to the universe. And so when I got back with Holly, we were in the studio, I noticed that my receptor wasn't on, and I figured I was in such a hurry, I forgot to put it on. But by the night, I went upstairs looking for it, and it was disappeared. It had gone. I no longer had it anymore. So I figured, well, somebody in the house must have, I had some therapists come over here to do some massage. I must have taken it off when the massage people came. Well, I went looking for it, and by the time the week went by, I realized I didn't have this receptor anymore. So my wife, she's starting to freak out now, because, you know, it's about $3,000 of materials in this receptor just to make it. It's $3,000. And it's gone. And I'm saying, I've got to have another one of these things. But we really can't afford it right now. It's history. So I knew this thing was going to come back. Because it was like the very first one that Tomiyasu gave me was solid gold. Until they took it away, it was solid gold. So I knew it had a magical power. One psychic said she'd seen it on a shelf in a house. And I said, that's possible. So I didn't see my receptor any. This receptor was now gone. Chain, everything was gone for about 3 months. One night I was down here at the Cedar Creek Inn because the guitar player in my band, who used to work with Kenny Loggins, was playing down there. And he finishing up about 11 o'clock. And I had started to wear the fake one because I didn't have the real thing anymore. So I was wearing the silver plate, the solid silver one, the fake one. I had it on, right? So I had the fake one on, and I went out and I had my motorcycle sitting out in front of Cedar Creek Inn, because I always like to sit watch it when I'm in there so nobody doesn't run off with it. And something said to me, Fred, don't get on that motorcycle. go for a walk to the beach right now. A little voice went off. Boom. Okay, I'll go. All right. When that happens, I immediately do what I'm told to do. So I start walking down Beach Street, or Forest Avenue, towards the beach. And I get down there, one block from the beach, and it's about 11:30 now, and some little blonde kid comes up on a skateboard. He's about 15 or 16 years old. And he comes running up to me with his little buddy on a skateboard, and he points at this receptor that I'm wearing. And I got it on like there. It looks like the real thing. He says, "Do you make those?" And I says, "Yeah." He says, "Did you ever lose one of those?" I says, "Yeah." He says, "I have it." And I says, "Good." And so he says, "Is there a reward for this?" And I says, "You bet there is. Because I know there's only one with a diamond bridge. And that's the real thing." I says, "How would you like a $100 bill right now for returning that?" He says, "That sounds great." So we went back, and I had to go get my truck. I put him in the truck. And we drove down to his house. He was on the beach down here. And he brought out my receptor that he had for 3 months. He said he found it up at the high school. So him and his friend, I took him up to the house, gave him his $100 bill. I gave him a promise tape. I gave him a promise book. I gave him about everything they wanted, you know. So, and then they proceeded to read it. And the only thing that happened to this receptor is the car had run over it. It didn't hurt the receptor at all, because nothing's been changed on it, but the gold bridge is bent. So then that little voice told me, I received a plaque, and sometimes I do bartering. One seminar, a guy came in, he wanted Systems 3, he didn't have any money, but he had a Harley Davidson. Well, I'll take a Harley Davidson, because I like to buy motorcycles. So I took a Harley Davidson for Systems 3. It's about a $14,000 bike. And so another guy came in, who was a producer, he didn't have any money, and he wanted a system, he gave me some platinum coins, you know, like Cougarans or gold, they have platinum coins. So I had the platinum coin cut in half. Boom. And half of that platinum coin went into making this platinum bridge, which is now raised, and it's changed a little bit, because I knew it was time to upgrade this receptor, seeing as it wasn't going anywhere, and it was telling me to change the frequency on it from gold to a contrast of gold and silver metal, no platinum. Then I'd be smart enough to realize, you know, when it fell off my neck the next time, that I'd lost it. I wouldn't be so stupid, so I needed more energy. And then I took the emerald that was on it and mounted a meteorite on it instead, because I needed more of this meteorite energy, extraterrestrial energy, than I did the emerald energy at the time. I still do. And so I made it. And so then Roy came along, and then he started buying a few receptors, giving a few to his friends here and there. And so I realized this guy had a special healing purpose on the planet. So then one night he starts talking to me about the gold receptor and what they're like to wear, because he was wearing a silver one. And the spaceship starts hovering outside the house. And so I look outside the house and I'm talking to him. And the spaceship is hovering out there and it stays for about 20 minutes and it takes off, and then all the black helicopters came. Well, just as the spaceship took off and the helicopter started to come to where the spaceship was, the military ones, a voice came inside of me and says, "When Roy gets the receptor, you're supposed to take the other half of that coin and make him one identical to the one you have." So right over there, and with a meteorite that he's wearing, because Roy once again is loaning out his receptor, is the identical pyramid with half the coin, and this is the only two in the whole world that are identical. You know, so there's a magic that goes with these things too. There's a whole, everything that has to do with extraterrestrial science has this magic. Everything. And so when you apply it to your life, and then Joe over here, he gets his up in Canada, he's got to wear two. He's the only guy I know on the whole planet, I think maybe Ron does, but wears two of them. So he found out that he had to have two of them. But then you go to his house and you see his fire star. He's got a little room, you know, sealed away, and in the room are 15 lasers shooting into one fire star. He's got this chair that you sit down on that vibrates and it's like a spaceship. He's got this Bose stereo system. When you sit down in that chair, kick on that stereo, you're out of there. You're flat out of there. And I sent Roy up to Joe's house, because Roy lives in San Francisco and he had to go up to Canada to work. So I sent him over to Joe's house, and were you out of there when you sat down in that chair? So we have the fun. There's the magic of this, you know. There's this whole, I could go on for a thousand stories like this one I just told. So the receptors have a very, very powerful place in our system, and all these systems have a very powerful place in the scheme of things. Okay, now, has anybody got any questions on the receptor? I'll have to talk about it a little more.
I just got a quick one for you. Why isn't some engineer designer just put a little glass and you can just change stones on it? Because as you say, we change the frequency.
Yeah, you mean why don't we change the stones?
Well, just put a glass that you can open it and then just change the stone, put another stone in and close it.
Yeah, I don't know. We keep playing with them. We keep engineering them. We have been changing stones on the silver ones by just opening up the prongs on them, yeah. You know, and the gold ones. So that we have been doing. I don't know if a glass would look all that good or not. We now have, I think, does yours have one of those stone in the back too up here on the thing?
No.
See, I have the early model. It didn't have that. The newer ones now, everybody seems to want a meteorite. So we have a model. You can get muscle tested for the one you need and stick a meteorite on your neck. Is yours have a meteorite in it? Or have you got a ruby or something? What have you got in here? What's in your, inside your class?
I don't know. What do I have? She never told me about that.
Is it an anaphylactic? What color is it?
Nothing.
You don't have one in yours? Okay. Roy's has one. Does yours have one in it? Does yours have one in it?
Yeah.
A gold one?
Did you say one?
Look at that's Roy. That's Roy. That's yours. He's wearing, right?
Yeah.
Look at that. I think that one does.
He does. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that one's got a stone on it. Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
You didn't even know it was in there. I put that in yours. I haven't upgraded mine. When I upgrade my chain again, then I'm going to have that in there, you know. There's a lot of little stuff we do fooling around with these things, you know. So, is there any questions now on what we've covered today? On any of the stuff. Nothing?
Can I ask a question on something we haven't covered?
What? Yeah.
A guy by the name of William Bramley wrote a book,
Believe in God's Way.
Yeah. You know, and I'm wondering, in terms of various spiritual traditions and masters and such, who's who? It seems like the good men guys are like very close.
Oh, yeah,
they're right down in every tradition.
Yeah.
So how do you filter through? I'm in the process.
You have to go with the bad guys and learn from them first, which is typically what happens. And you study them with other point of contradiction. And unless you do that, you'll never know.
Where are these?
Like I say, it takes forever to learn all this, and you've got forever to learn it. There's a lot of black masters. I think I've studied with all of them. I don't think there's any more. I'd be really surprised if I could study under another black master, at least in this lifetime. Because I can recognize them immediately now, because I've already had the experience, you know. They've taken me through one horrible experience after another, so I've had them all, you know, and then you learn.
So you're saying, go for it.
Go for it.
Let your heart tell you.
Yeah. You'll either be destroyed by them or you'll destroy them, one of the official master. One of two things will happen. Because if you're powerful enough for them to take you up, you know, if they're a black adept and you study with them, and then obviously there's something in there they want from you, and if you're powerful enough to survive them, then you become the master over them. And that's the way the game is played. That's really played a lot by the Tibetans. It's kind of a Tibetan game, and the White Brotherhood. That's how you get initiated into that, especially the Black Brotherhood, the Dark Brotherhood first.
So you're saying the White Brotherhood is cool?
They're cool,
but
you don't know who they are until you get to know them. Yeah. And there's a lot
of... I heard that Aleister Crowley was a black master.
Possibly. I never studied with him. I never knew the man.
I think he was too loaded most of the time to be any kind of
master. Yeah, it might have been. I studied with a lot of Tibetan masters in this life. I've been through all kinds of tests and initiations. And it wasn't just... I don't think I can... I mean, it was a constant, you know, e-ride at Disneyland, being around different masters that I've been in. Some of the stuff they did, I wasn't even trying to do. You know, they got me into things like Gompa running to the point where I was running 25 miles an hour, and in fact, my lungs almost collapsed because of the toxins I was getting in them. You know, they got me into Tummo, which is going up into the mountains and melting snow for 4 hours, totally new. You know, snow. They had me out there in the desert. They gave me a strychnine to kill 50 people. I had to live on the desert with no food or water for 3 days. You know, tons of strychnine in my body. You know, they purposely tried to kill me. You know, that was part of the test. The earlier version, though, was the American Indians, where you got in a circle with snakes and got snake bites. But they didn't want to kill a snake. They gave me the strychnine and tablets instead. Put me on an Indian reservation, sacred ground.
What did you feel like? What did it make you feel like? Were weak?
Hmm?
Weakness?
What did it feel like? That much strychnine? Whoa. Well, first of all, I got so damn, I had to prepare for it for a year. I only weighed 155 pounds when I took the test. I think it was 32 or 33 years old. I think it was 32. And I had to eat fruit and nuts for a year to get that thin. I had to starve down. And the idea of that was to shed all this weight, outer weight, and all these toxins that you pick up with weight. Because they said when the poison hit me, that the poison's going to kill me, you know, if I'm going to survive this thing. So then I had to do, I still do 100, 200 fire breaths a day. In those days, I was doing 10,000 at a time. That's where you breathe as fast as you can in and out. And then we do trispasso, where you sit in the lotus position on the ground and you look into the other person's left eye, and you do 10,000 fire breaths, which then creates a vortex of energy around you, and the two of you can go anywhere in the universe you want. I often, something like some stuff I learned in the Eck teachings also was similar to that. And so then I had to do that, and then when I gave me all this poison, it was on a Friday night, and I had to park my van. They gave me the poison, and I had to start walking across the desert in any direction. That's what I did. And the poison started hitting me within about 20 minutes. So the first thing I had to do was create a huge amount of oxygen. So I did about 10,000 fire breaths to supercharge my body with oxygen so I wouldn't pass out. And then I ran for 20 miles. And I ran way into the night, totally naked on the desert, not caring what I ran into, just running to keep alive. And then I stopped and they taught me a bunch of kundalini exercises. When the cells of the body were handling this, dealing, then I started doing these powerful kundalini exercises. That was from the next day, you know. And by that time, I was going into convulsions and delirious. I couldn't see where I was or hear where I was. I was in an entirely different universe for all I knew. And then I passed out that night, which would have been a Saturday night, the start on Friday. I passed out. And then I had these wonderful euphoric, you know, like in Billy Jack, visions and experiences. And then the next day, I woke up about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, totally spread eagle, naked, on an anthill that was this high, with ants that big, crawling all around me, not even getting near me. I mean, spread eagle, totally naked, with a great sunburn, you know, on top of this anthill. And by Sunday night, I was down, and I figured out where I was. I could now see, because on Saturday afternoon, I look over there at the mountains and try to get my bearings, and the mountain was going like that, and just forget it. I mean, I had no visual sensation of where I was. So by that sunny night, when it came down, I felt like $1,000,000. I was clear, I was relaxed, I was a little tired, and I figured out where I was, and I walked another 10 miles back to my truck, put my clothes back on, came back into society. And that was one of my things like that. Another time they had me climb Mount Shasta with a business suit on and not get one bit of dirt on me. And they made me climb Mount Shasta with a business suit on through the brush and the brambles and the briars and not get dirty. And for that, I received a cane, a big cane, which you'll see in the house tonight. They call it the Cane of Moses ceremony or something. I did this, you know. I mean, I have it at home. You know, the only thing I didn't have to do was jump off a cliff. He had to do that one, I think. You jumped off a cliff, right? He got some of the similar testing. He jumped off. How high was your cliff? How high was your cliff?
I don't remember, but I didn't care.
He just jumped, you know. He had some similar teachings. I mean, all of us in here, I'm sure, have had something. So different friends of mine have been through some of these ceremonies. What I really liked, though, was the Tummo. Tummo was fun. They took me up to Mammoth. And I got way up in the mountains. And then I took all my clothes off and jumped in a snowbank and melted. And that took a lot of fire breathing. That was in the winter after the desert thing. So I was still in pretty good shape. I was probably up to 160 pounds by then. And that was a real, real rough. That was a lot of fun. You know,
I jumped into a river and took a bath and spent a little zero outside.
Yeah, that'll give you a rush
in there and took a bath. The so-called soul wouldn't lie.
Wow.
I was up there hunting and I didn't have any bath for about 3 months. We were up there moose hunting.
Yeah.
So I decided I wanted to take a bath, and so I jumped in.
Yeah, go ahead.
When you hyperoxygenate oxygenate the body with these breathing techniques, is it important to take extra antioxidants? You know, vitamin C and all that?
it helps a lot now. Of course, in those days, I don't think I took hardly any vitamins. You know, that I wasn't hadn't been introduced to nutrition that much yet. I was coming out of the aerospace industry. I used to smoke 2 packs of cigarettes a day. I did all the wrong things. I wasn't a real healthy human being. That was probably why I got into medicine. I was always trying to keep myself alive. I was born with polio, collapsed chest, which I still have, a big kind of like a cavity right here. I was basically dead when I was born, you know, but I just worked through from that. I had all kinds of ridiculous diseases dropped on me over my life. You know,
life comes from death.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. The GABA running was fun. That was fun, the running out of body. Whoa, we beat it out of the desert. Which I started doing in town. And that's not. And out in Laguna Beach, you know, we did it on the mountaintops up here. But still, when you're running that fast and that for that long a period, you take in a lot of toxins and stuff. And I ended up just about perforating my lungs, you know. Like I came down with the worst case of pneumonia and asthma and everything for about a year after that. I could hardly run at all. It just hit me all at once. I didn't realize what I was doing, you know. I was taught that discipline. And it was fun. But, a little destructive when you do it, you know, to start doing it, you know. Couldn't let it go.
Why do you think you subjected yourself to that?
I don't know. I have no idea. It was fun. I guess because every time I did one of those exercises, I got some new thrilling experience out of it that I hadn't previously experienced. And I'm one of these kinds of people that likes to do everything, you know, try everything once. Hang gliding, skiing, you know. We're a bunch of wild people. We were up one time. We were up at Aspen, and the Pleiades, we have a device which I'll talk about tomorrow, which breaks down, it's called the Champagne Reflector. What it does is it breaks down programming from society, you know. If you look at a, I can show you maybe a design of it now.